Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a new center just opened at the Illinois Holocaust Museum in Skokie. It's called the Take a Stand Center, and it features holograms of 13 Holocaust survivors telling their stories. Its goal is to create a way to give the visitor the unique experience of interacting in person with a survivor. And this is very important, because the stories of what happened in Eastern Europe during World War II have to be told, preserved, and archived as a reminder of what horrors have come before. Of the 13 featured, 7 are from the Chicago area, including Aaron Elster. Elster spent years in a Poland ghetto until it was liquidated in 1942. But before he could be moved to another camp, Aaron escaped, and he hid in various Polish farms and attics till the war ended. He was 10 years old. He came to America in 1947 with his sister. I'm pleased to welcome tonight's Shoshana Buchholz-Miller. She is the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. And also, it's a pleasure to have Aaron Elster at the big table here in studio as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Elster, thanks for being here. Shoshana, thanks for being
here.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with you, Shoshana? This is a big deal for you guys because you've been working on this for a while, the Take a Stand Center. This is, as much as it is a new part of the museum, it's also a new way to tell this story. Talk about the origins of where this idea came from.
It's really an incredible way to bring these stories alive. So we have partnered with the USC Shoah Foundation, and one of our board members, Jim Goodman, had been thinking about how it would be amazing to bring Holocaust survivors to the public through holograms. And he had this brainchild and happened to be sitting next to, at an event, Stephen Smith, who runs the USC Shoah Foundation, who was having the same idea. And so it was amazing synergy. The incredible part of it was that not only are the survivors holograms, but they use interactive technology. So the visitor can ask the recorded survivor a question, and the survivor will answer. So you are having a very lifelike conversation with the recording.
How important is it to keep up with technology when you want to tell the stories of survivors? Because I would imagine that over time, you need more and more celebrated technology to get the story across, especially to a younger generation.
I think there is a truth to that, but I think the most compelling thing for us is that we are blessed to have survivors still with us and able to tell those stories, and we know that that is the most compelling way to tell the story of the Holocaust, but we know we won't have that forever. And to be able to use this technology to create this really empathetic engagement between a visitor and learning the story of the Holocaust has been really a game changer for us.
It's a tremendous way to archive the stories. Mm-hmm. As generations and generations, they tell their stories and we move on from those generations, this is a way for it to be almost a way to tell these stories when some of the survivors are gone.
That's exactly what our goal has been. And we have been testing these stories with school groups over the past few weeks as we've been getting ready for our opening. And what's incredible is to see how the school groups will ask the recording a question saying, tell me about when you did this. Tell me about when you were in hiding. Because they really feel like the person is there. The technology falls away, and it's about the story and that human connection.
13 Holocaust mm-hmm. survivors are featured. 7 are from Chicago. Is that mm-hmm. on purpose because the museum is here in Chicago, or is that just how it played out?
Yes, we were very lucky in our partnership with the Shoah Foundation that's based in California, that part of this partnership together was that we would be able to have 7 of our survivors tell their stories and to be able to include different experiences to kind of give a suite of experiences to the visitor.
What are some of the featured experiences? We're going to talk with Aaron in just a moment here about his experience, but when you talk about a suite, what's the diversity of story?
Right. So telling a story about a Holocaust survivor, they're varied in their stories. So we have a couple of survivors who survived Auschwitz and other concentration camps. One survivor is from the former Soviet Union, so he lived in the Minsk ghetto for a number of years and then escaped with his mother. We have a couple of survivors who lived hiding as in plain sight, acting as non-Jews with false papers. So we have this, and we have one who was a very young boy who was hidden in a concentration camp for a number of years. He was a very young child survivor.
Well, Aaron Elster is with us tonight, a survivor who has written a book about his experiences. He's also featured in the new Take a Stand Center. I guess it's a center.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to say it's an exhibit, but a center. You're featured in one of the holograms. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk with Aaron about his experiences, not only for this exhibit, but also for in your life. So Aaron Elster in studio as well with Shoshana Buchholz-Miller. She's the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. And they're my guests tonight at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio tonight, we're talking about the new Take a Stand Center at the Illinois Holocaust Museum right here in Skokie. Shoshana Buchholz-Miller is the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. And also Aaron Elster is featured in the new exhibit, which essentially holograms your life, your story. You are a hologram. How does it make you feel that you are 3D at this point?
Well, I'll tell you this way. When three of us were initially asked to go down to California to do the holograms, there was some hesitation, and then yet we were looking forward to it because this felt like we're going to leave something for the future, because most of us know we're not going to be around here very long. It was a trying experience because you had to sit in a chair for 5 days and answer over 2,000 questions.
Wow.
However, when it's all said and done, I feel humbled. I feel proud. I feel an awful lot of compassion for what we did, because in essence, when I'm no longer here, I'm leaving a legacy for the future, because it's important that young people understand what humanity, what human beings are capable of doing to one another. And I see thousands and thousands of kids during the course of the year. I tell them my story. However, I encourage them to be upstanders, to make a difference, that each and every one of them can help change this world for the better with the slightest little goodness. Because you join it all together and it's a big thing. I also tell them they're smarter and tougher than they give themselves credit for. And I truly believe that they can overcome all kinds of adversity and become the dreams that they have of themselves. And the reason for that is because I did things as a 10-year-old. Now, looking back, it's difficult for me to believe it, that I was able to do what I did, because I wanted to live so desperately.
You and your family were in a Polish ghetto. You were born in 1933, so you were young. You started in this process of, what, 5, 6 years old?
When the war broke out, 1939, 7?
When it all started and the war broke out and you were with your family in that ghetto, what memories do you have? Do you go that far back? Do you go to 8
absolutely.
Years old?
Absolutely. Yeah. I have memories that are 78 years old. But you can't ask me what I had for breakfast today because I don't remember. But 70 years ago, 75 years ago, certain things make an impact on your life that is with you forever. I have mourned my parents' demise for years. But I had a little sister by the name of Sarah, who was 6 years of age, who died such a horrible death in a death camp called Treblinka. I've stopped mourning for my parents, my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, but Sarah is still 6 years old, and she lives within me forever.
When you were so young, at 8 years old, 9 years old, did you know what was happening? Did your parents shelter you in a form that when in the ghetto?
We knew rumors, because Treblinka was only 17 miles away from our town. And the people that were pulled out supposedly for work to Treblinka, nobody ever came back. Once in a great while, somebody would escape, come back and tell the people in the town, and most wouldn't believe it. Because humanity, human beings will not accept finality, that they're going to die. It's the nature that we have. So we did know. Plus the fact they created a ghetto. They took a 5-block area in my town, where normally 500-600 people lived. And if you lived outside the area, they'd come to your house and tell you got 15 minutes. to move into the ghetto. And what happens? They establish rules. Each room in the ghetto had to contain 7 people. We were put on rations, 486 grams of food. Doctors not allowed to practice medicine. No medications, no soaps. Suddenly people start to die. They die of typhus, they die of hunger. And as a kid, maybe 8, 9 years old, you walk the streets, you see dead people lined up against building, waiting for a detail to come, throw them in a wagon, take them into the back where the potato field was and bury them. So you lived with that. And this is where the fear was created in me, the need that I had. I wanted to live so desperately.
When were you separated from your family?
1942.
So when they liquidated the camps.
They liquidated the ghetto.
The ghetto, excuse me.
We went into hiding. I can tell you some things that happened in the hiding place. I don't know if you want to know about it or not, but there must have been 35 people in that one room hiding place on the second floor of our building. And I tell you this because people don't understand how people can do certain things to other people. There was a mother sitting where you're sitting, breastfeeding her child, and the child began to cry. And everybody around this poor woman tells her to shut that kid up so we're not discovered. And if you can imagine a mother placing her hand on a child's face and begins to exert pressure, and suddenly the child's legs kick and flail, and then it's dead. It's quiet. And in spite of it, we're discovered. We're dragged out of our hiding place, lined up against the wall of the building, chased up to the marketplace. And I wish I had the words to describe to you the fear, because I knew I was going to die and I know it was going to be painful. Just don't have the words to do that. And I'm sitting in the marketplace, one line behind the other of people that they dragged out of their homes and so on, waiting to be transported by train to Treblinka. And I'm crying and I'm begging and I'm pleading with God to save me. And I says to my dad, what should I do? What should I do? He tells me to run. Initially, I thought, how can I run? They're going to see me. They're going to shoot me. But he says, run. So I crawled behind the lines of people on my stomach, you know. And then at the end of the marketplace where the street was, there was an open sewer. I crawled in there, kept crawling till I felt I was out of sight. Stood up, started running, and got out of the ghetto. So where do you go? I wound up in the woods because it was still fairly decent weather. And then in the mornings I would get up early, I mean early, before the farmers, and steal some of their potatoes that they buried. And those potatoes became my diet. And you're scared.
Yeah.
And you think everybody wants you dead. Now you think, you know, everybody wants you dead.
And you're 10 years old.
And you're 10 years old. And how do you do this as a 10-year-old? I talk to young people that are 12, 13. I don't know how the hell they would survive. But there's something within us. And that's why I tell this or I say this to young people. You either give in to your pain and you die, or somehow you absorb the torture and the pain and the hunger and the cold, but you keep your mind, you keep your soul. And somehow, is it God's help or what?
My guest tonight at the big table, Aaron Elster, is a Holocaust survivor. We're talking about his experience. It's on display in hologram form at the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Skokie, with the new Take a Stand Center, where you and 12 other survivors are in hologram form, where visitors can interact and ask you questions. Also in studio with us tonight, Shoshana Buchholz-Miller, who is the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the museum. We'll do this. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news, and we'll come back and we'll continue the conversation with Aaron Elster in studio. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, we're talking with Aaron Elster, Holocaust survivor, as well as Shoshana Buchholz-Miller. She's the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. It's a brand new center, the Take a Stand Center, which takes 13 survivors, puts them in hologram form so the visitor can interact, ask questions, and have a conversation with Holocaust survivor. Aaron Elster is featured in the new center, and he's sharing his story with us tonight. Before the break in the news, we talked about running and the concept of not knowing where you're running and having to go out to the woods to find food. But it's not just running. Half of it or more is hiding. You farms until the winter, and then you had to come back in, and you had to hide in attics, a story that's well known around the world about hiding. Talk about that experience, being alone, being on your own.
Well, I want you to picture this, if you would. You're 10 years old. You have very short pants on with a little jacket. You're afraid to knock on farmers' doors because you don't know who's going to be friendly and who's not going to be. And, you know, there was a lot of complicity. But out of total desperation, you knock on a farmer's door one night and you plead for his kind mercy. The man takes you down to the cellar of his house, and his daughter, maybe 12, 13 years old, brings you some hot cooked milk with potatoes in it. That act changed my whole perception of life, my whole perception of whether I'm going to survive or not. Suddenly it gave me such an elation. I felt maybe this man will keep me. Maybe they'll make me part of their family. And you have such great hopes. And then a few hours later, he calls me up from the cellar and he tells me he's afraid of his life. He's afraid if the Germans find out he's helping a Jew, they'll kill him, his wife, his children, they'll burn the house down. And that's a fact. But what he said to me stays with me forever. He tells me, why don't you just give yourself up? Because there's no longer any future for people like you. You're not supposed to exist. But I wanted to live. I don't know where I got the audacity to insist on that. I don't know, but I did. I would do and I did anything in order to survive. Now, picture yourself 10 years old, there's 2 feet of snow on the ground in the fields, and you're trying to make your way back to the town to get to that Polish couple that you wanted to. And every time you take a step, your foot gets stuck. And you take another step, and then you got to pull the first foot out. And you're freezing. You can't feel your hands. You can't feel your feet. And you continue. How do you do it? I don't know, but you continue. And then I finally got to a destination. People that knew my parents, that I knew, knocked on a door. She saw me, Mrs. Gursky. Started screaming at me for coming there. I says, my mother told me that you would help me. You're my last chance of trying to stay alive. And I pleaded and I cried and pleaded so desperately. She finally said, okay, I'll let you up to the attic, but only for a few days. And then you must leave and find your mother again. And she took some straw, put it in a sack. And if you can picture the attic, the roof is slanted like that. It's made out of tin plates. The floor is cement and dirt. And you have no blanket. You have no other clothes. And it's dark in there. And it's winter. And it's so cold. And you're hungry. And you're scared. And you feel that the whole world wants you dead.
As a 10-year-old, it's hard, like you said, even in the conversation, it's hard to fathom. I can't wrap my head around it.
Neither can I at this stage of my life.
Where was your family at this point? As a 10-year-old in that moment, do you just figure they're gone?
We were pulled out of a hiding place. My dad, my baby sister Sarah, who I can tell you about, chased up to the marketplace. My mother was pulled out of line. We didn't know what was going to happen to her, but found out later that she was put on our work detail. Her and about 50 others, their job was to clean up the ghetto, pack all belongings that the Germans wanted. And my poor little sister, Sarah, after I ran away, wound up going to Treblinka with my dad. And people don't understand, when you die in a gas chamber, you just don't die. It takes 15 to 20 minutes before you're finally dead, and you're choking. And if you're little, bigger people climb on top of you in order to reach out any fresh air that still exists at the ceiling level. People do this to one another. And that's the picture I carry of my little sister, Sarah. And it's never gone away.
The war ends. You're still in hiding. At that point, take us to that moment. The idea that perhaps all of the thoughts that you had that you weren't going to live.
I never gave up. Don't know where I got that or where I learned that or anything. I always felt somehow that I was going to survive. I don't know how or why, but I did. And frankly, I think this is what helps you survive. Because you're convinced that it's going to get better. Then maybe you'll even find your parents. You dream. You take your mind away from your misery, and that's how you exist. Now think about the summer for a second. 95 degrees. You're laying right underneath the roof. You can bake on it. The air is sucked out of that attic, and you lay there. Still, totally still, soaked with sweat with the slightest movement, hoping to survive
day
till
after
evening
day.
Came. And then you hope to live for another day. You live for a day at a time, an hour at a time. So, you know, winter was terrible. And summer, when it got hot, was just as bad in a different way. And you sit there. Have nobody to speak to. You can't read. There's nothing to read. You don't know how to read or write. And you're full of lice and all kinds of vermin, and you spend hours trying to delouse yourself because, you know, you spend 2 years, close to 2 years in that attic, never washed, never changed clothes, never cut your hair, never brushed your teeth, and you survive.
You tell this story not only in the hologram, but you wrote a book about your experiences. You have also, you speak to children, to others. You're a guest speaker in different places. When you're in the throes of telling this story, like you are right now, to go back to something that many of us in this room that are listening right now cannot fathom, cannot understand, and have never been in any close scenario to what you're describing. Where are you at in the place when you go back?
You have to ask that in two questions. If you ask me what I did 20 years ago when I was speaking, it was extremely painful. You open up your heart and you bleed in front of people. You truly do. And then time has a means or a way of subsiding that pain. But then you're concerned that you're just going to tell a story. And if that's the case, they might as well read a book instead of listening to you. So you have to continue speaking in an emotional way. And I do. I'm very fortunate. I'm able to reach young people because I think I speak on their level. So emotions don't go away. They lighten up some because otherwise you couldn't survive. You know, you have to accept certain things and then live with it. You know, after the war, I hated everything and everybody around me. And I've been criticized for saying what I said because I wanted to wipe Germany off the map. Excuse for me saying that. I hate it. But then you realize that if you continue to hate, you're destroying yourself because the people you hate couldn't care less, don't even know you. So you learn how to make peace with yourself. And that's how you survive. If you don't do that, you don't make it.
Shoshana, I want to bring you back in here for both of you. With the work that you do at the Illinois Holocaust Museum and the story that you tell, Aaron, the story of your life, when a child comes in and maybe tours with a third grade class, fourth grade class, and you tell these stories, what's their reaction? Are they able to comprehend the Holocaust, Holocaust survivors, and what happened that's right in front of them?
I've learned to respect young people much more than I ever did. 13, 14-year-olds are so worldly. They understand. They put themselves sometimes in your place and trying to think, could they have done that? And they come up to you and they hug you and they talk to you and they send you letters. And you feel, I feel a certain accomplishment that I'm contributing something. I don't know if I'm right or wrong or not, that I can mix it up with these young people, that I can reach them. I'm very fortunate. We, every month, get a contingent of police recruits that I'm fortunate to speak to. And I love these guys, you know. But it's different when you speak to adults and when you speak to young people. Your language changes. Because I can say certain things to a policeman that I wouldn't dare say to a youngster.
Full circle here, Shoshana. At the beginning, we talked about preserving these stories. As we hear Aaron's story tonight, you think about how you're going to interact as a museum when people like Aaron are no longer with us. And that generation of kids are new, with a new third grade class that comes through, and they're now engaging with a hologram or they're engaging with the written word, mm-hmm. but they don't have that experience to be in the same room with someone who went through such atrocities. How at the museum are you thinking about that? Think about that next level, the next generation.
So there's nothing that is as effective as speaking to someone like Aaron in person. But I think the next best thing is what we have in these interactive holograms, because they are very real and very engaging. And the fact that you can feel like you're having a conversation is really quite incredible and really makes you have that empathy. And what we want is to tell the story of the Holocaust so that it isn't just a footnote. Mm-hmm. But not only that, we want our visitors to leave inspired to stand up and speak out when they see something wrong, because they hear about stories where people didn't, and where good people didn't do things, and where some good people did, and the difference that it made in lives like Aaron's. And so that is the goal of us telling these stories, that our visitors will walk away with the desire to do something.
My last question for you, Aaron, is as you think about your life, have you been telling stories and new generation of kids are learning about the Holocaust, do you worry as you get older in life that when the generation is gone, that the public consciousness will go with it?
That was and is my concern, not just mine, but a lot of Holocaust survivors. When we're gone, will it be two sentences in the history books during World War II, they killed Jews? That's it? That's why I feel so humbled. I feel so passionate about what we did. Because if you have a chance to look at it, we sit there in three dimensions. We're out there with the students. And they're able to ask any question at all. And there's very little that we will not be able to answer, because we answered 2,000 questions.
My guest tonight on the show, Aaron Elster. Aaron, a Holocaust survivor, and Shoshana Buchholz-Miller is the Vice President of Education and Exhibits at the Illinois Holocaust Museum. Aaron and 12 others, their stories are featured in a new hologram center. Take a Stand Center is the best way to say that. But your stories and 12 others are in. You can go in and interact and ask questions of Holocaust survivors at the Illinois Holocaust Museum in Skokie. I can't thank you both enough for coming in and sharing your story, Aaron, and Shoshana talking about the exhibit or the new center. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's great being with you. I thank you for listening.